The following is an actual recording of M. Night Shyamalan's production meeting for The Happening. It has never been heard before.
Yeah, take a seat, Shyamalama.
It's Shyamalan, actually.
Shama Pistachio, right. Now listen here, kid. We need a new picture, see?
A picture to scare my mother. Yeah.
Well, I do have a good idea for a disaster movie. It's called The Happening.
Yeah, lay it on us, Shamaskatchewan.
It's Shyamalan.
Shamawawalan, like I said. Yeah.
It's about a high school mathematician who realizes a string of mysterious deaths are actually part of a covert plot by Russian spies to infect New York City with a modified version of pandemic flu. And then he gets caught in the middle and he has to protect his family while the whole world falls apart around him, people killing themselves left and right. It's numbers meets contagion.
Yeah, see, too complicated.
Yeah, nobody will go see it.
Yeah, see, we gotta make it simple, Shyamalama Ding Dong.
It's Shyamalan.
Right, Shama Crackers.
Well, I'm open to suggestions.
How about we hire Mark Wahlberg to play a confused biology teacher with marital problems?
Yeah, see? And we'll make the infection something simple, like plants using complex chemical signatures to communicate and spread a botanical infection across the Northeast.
And we'll have a guy obsessed with hot dogs and a cranky old lady with poor social skills for no apparent reason.
Yeah, and we'll make Marky Mark randomly recite a completely inaccurate explanation of the scientific method at random times.
Yeah, see? And we can have them run from wind.
Wind?
That's right, Shammy boy. Wind.
It's Shyamalan.
And a marital conflict will be about a girl feeling guilty about having dessert with a coworker.
Wait, you mean they didn't have an actual affair?
Yeah, see, it's more suspenseful and simple if she feels guilty for doing nothing, and Marky Mark's completely passive-aggressive about it.
Yeah, and then they'll make up while speaking to one another through an old pipe in the ground from a 150-year-old shack previously used to hide slaves, even though it's above ground and has no underground tunnels whatsoever.
Well, I don't know.
Now listen here, kid. We'll make the best friend a mathematician who's obsessed with making people feel better with bullshit statistics, see?
Yeah, and he'll leave his child behind to go find the mother even though he secretly hates the wife.
Yeah, and that'll create narrative tension, see?
I'm certain the original version will work better for American audiences.
Yeah, see, that's why you ain't done any good pictures in a while, kid. You don't think inside the box. You're always thinking of the logical choices, see?
I don't think that's true. I think many of my movies have been outside the box.
Yeah, see? You came up with a brilliant title, The Happening, see? But then you gummed it all up with your ridiculous plots and poorly understood science.
Actually, the CDC says...
Poppycock, the CDC ain't know nothing. My mother tells me what's what, and she knows from Adam.
That's right, see? Yeah.
I don't think this will work. Maybe I should take the script elsewhere.
Now you listen here, Shyamalamas.
Shyamalan.
Right, Shimichanga. Well, now listen here, see? We ain't taking no for an answer, see? We're gonna have us this picture, and you're gonna like it. Yeah.
And if I refuse?
We'll make sure the last airbender never gets made.
You wouldn't dare.
Yeah, see? Quid pro quo.
Yeah, you scratch our backs, we'll let you make your Nickelodeon picture however you like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, fine, okay, I'll do it. But on one condition. The final scene will involve the virus breaking out in France.
France, eh?
Why?
I don't like them. Not one bit. Thus concludes the recording. The Happening will be released in 2008, with The Last Airbender following in 2010. It is believed the unnamed Hollywood executives now work for the NSA, illegally monitoring the Germans using a covert network of informants. M. Night Shyamalan was secretly arrested by a United Nations Security Committee for incitement against France. He continues to produce movies from the safety of a maximum security prison cell in Antarctica.
Dun, dun, dun!
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the crowd forgot one thing, yes. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
Torture Cinema, The Happening. Plants are foes, not food.
I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
I'm Julia.
And we're watching The Happening. Yay!
I like how you're the only one who cheered.
No, that wasn't a cheer. That was like a slow waltz to death kind
of
thing.
Yeah, even the rest of us won't even do that because it's, no.
Yeah, this is not, it's not a very good movie. But we'll have a lot of fun things to share about me and this movie. So don't worry. It'll be good times. It'll be good times. So yeah, so you guys voted for this one. By you guys, I mean the small segment of you who actually vote in our polls. And then choose this film instead of what might have been a much more interesting film. I don't know what else. But in any case, yeah, so we're doing that. And that's it. It's just, look, it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I mean,
yeah. It is what it is on the tin.
This is like the worst side of M. Night Shyamalan.
No. Lady in the Water.
I feel like that's better than this.
Have you seen Lady in the Water?
I've seen 5 minutes of it, and that
don't
5 minutes
tell me
was
about
good.
How you think it's better than The Happening. Then I saw Lady in the Water in the theater. We paid full price. When Moss and I walked out of the movie at the end, the people selling popcorn looked at us with pity and sorrow in their eyes and said, "So how was it?" And we said, "That was terrible." And they said, "Yeah, most people say it's actually the worst movie they've ever seen."
It's going on torture right now.
Oh, no. Oh, God. I think I need to schedule an emergency trip to the Yukon for that one. Sorry, I'm in the Yukon. I can't record another M. Night Shyamalan.
If we do a torture cinema about it, I will have a special feature, an extra for us. Because I have a very special Lady in the Water related extra. I will only bring that out for Lady in the Water.
So, nice. Listeners, if you want this, when Lady in the Water shows up on a poll, you know what to do.
God, Sean, quote. You will love the horribleness that you can pull with the skit based on Lady in the Water.
Oh, no, I've already got good ideas for Paul Giamatti.
You haven't seen Lady in the Water, so you have no idea what horribleness you can rise to with the skit for Lady in the Water. There is so much material there for a bad skit.
All the skit's gonna be is Paul Giamatti playing the rhino and screaming Russian.
I'm just gonna leave you with two words which I will not explain. Madam Narf. You can try to figure out what that means, and if you've seen Lady in the Water, you'll know what I'm talking about. I'm sorry for you if you've seen Lady in the Water. However, if you don't, you're just gonna be like, what the hell is Madam Narf? It can't possibly be that ridiculous. And then you'll be like, oh my God, it really is. That's ridiculous. That's the best you could do, really. Really, M. Night Shyamalan, really?
Well, okay. Let's save it, because I feel like if we ever do that movie, it's currently on the list. You will have much to say that day, Julie.
I will have so much to say.
But on that note, why don't we actually talk about things related to this episode?
Like, say, what we're drinking.
I know, and I feel like, Julie, you should go last, because you said that you had something special that would make us jealous, so... We'll have you go last.
All right, then.
Paul, you'll go first.
I was motivated by the color of a label. As longtime listeners know, I drink Summit beer often on these podcasts. And in the store this time, I saw one with a blue label. I thought blue is interesting, so I will pick that up. It is a Summit True Brit IPA, which is very, very, very hoppy. If you like your beers hoppy and malty, this is the beer for you. It might be a little too hoppy and malty for my taste, but I'm drinking it anyway because I have to talk about The Happening. So there you go.
This podcast was brought to you by Summit IPA.
Well, me, I basically took what is in my fridge and poured it all together.
What does that actually entail? Like, I'm imagining now, like, ketchup and milk and some egg whites.
No, that would be horrifying. It's got some coconut milk in it. Let's see there. I think there's some vodka, some peppermint schnapps, Kahlua. I think that's it.
It's actually not as... schnapps and Kahlua? That sounds like a weird combination.
Yeah, it's basically what would normally be a White Russian Christmas, but not good. And I've drank half of my glass already.
My role-playing friends can tell that Sean's special aspect is trollish digestion.
So I'm trying to use up what alcohol's in there. So when we take a break in the middle and I get more booze, there probably will be some Jewish Concord, like, grape wine. Like Mouskowitz or Miskowitz.
Oh my God.
Manischewitz, there you go.
Did you say Mouskowitz?
If my Jewish friends and I have a number are listening to this podcast, I apologize for Sean.
Sure, we have to have some Jewish listeners.
I just knew it was kosher wine.
Let's pour this a glass of Mouskowitz.
We're not even smashed yet, and Sean's getting it wrong. Oh God,
so wrong, so wrong.
Starting with an M. It's close enough.
No, Sean, it's nothing like that.
It's great.
Yay. Okay, so should I say what I'm drinking?
Yes.
Okay, so it's summertime and it's hot. And Moss and I were like, let's make root beer floats. And then we were like, what if instead of making root beer floats, we mixed root beer with Bailey's? Would it be delicious? It could be. And then we were like, let's ask the internet. And it turns out that the internet is like, yes, mixing root beer with Bailey's tastes just like a root beer float, but is alcoholic. And you guys, it does. And it's brilliant and wonderful.
I need to try this.
Root beer and Bailey's Irish cream. It's so good.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
This. Oh, God.
So good. I told you guys you would be jealous of me. Like, basically, I am drinking a root beer float that is made with alcohol.
Man. Yeah, I'm jealous.
I got that summertime sadness. Summertime, summertime.
This is where also all of our non-U.S. listeners will be like, what the hell is a root beer float?
Root beer float, by the way, is the greatest beverage-related ice cream related thing.
That's yeah, really so like if you grow up in the U.S., you have root beer floats in the summertime when it's hot, and root beer is made with sarsaparilla, or at least it used to be, and now it's got that flavoring. And then you put vanilla ice cream into it, and the ice cream, like you can eat spoonfuls of the ice cream, but also as the ice cream melts into the root beer, it makes the root beer super creamy, and it's delicious.
It's so good. Although I would rather have root beer that's made with, like, the actual stuff.
Yeah. Well, the Midwest is a hotbed of really good micro root beers that have the real sarsaparilla. Wow.
Yeah, you can also actually do a Guinness float, which is delicious, too.
Hmm.
You can just put ice cream in a Guinness.
I feel like you could put ice cream in a lot of things and it would be delicious.
Yeah, but like you can do a plain beer float, which is pretty awesome.
Nice. So that's what
but
we're drinking.
Bailey's and root beer is so good, you guys.
Oh, I like Bailey's. So I imagine with root beer, it's delish.
Yeah, so I'm jealous.
I will have that next Christmas when we do some sort of Christmas-themed movie. I would do that.
You'll do a Bailey's and root beer?
Yeah, because Bailey's, all of the big Bailey's, like, what do you call them, like special sets of things come out during Christmas time. Spend like $20 and you get like a big bottle of regular Bailey's and a bunch of like the little ones. You get like mint Bailey's and other specialty ones. Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
It's for Christmas. I don't know why. It's good. And it helps me get drunk, so it makes me happy. Yeah. Good times. So anyway, so why don't we start talking about this stupid movie, because we have to talk about the movie instead of talking about things that are much more interesting, like beer. But we should probably start by actually describing what this movie's about. And
I feel like the skit just described what the movie was
about. Yeah, that's
about.
True.
But listeners haven't heard the skit yet.
No, they did.
No, it's going to be in the front.
Yeah, it's going to be at the front.
Okay.
Yeah, they got it. Yeah, so basically,
it's got Marky Mark, and he's a really bad science teacher at high school, and then people start killing themselves, and it turns out it's plants. That's basically it. I mean, there's like a David Annandale lookalike in this movie. But
oh, sorry, David.
Oh my god, that's horrible, Sean.
Well, like, if David Annandale didn't write 40K novels and spent his life, like, thinking plants could talk to us.
And being a super creepy stalker who, like, spied on all his neighbors, yeah.
Yeah, if that's what I mean by...
And a super creepster just generally, oh god.
Yeah, yeah.
No, David's much better than that guy.
Oh no, I'm not saying that they're alike. I'm just saying that there were similarities.
Maybe.
Not like personality, David's like way much cooler. Cause as far as I know, David doesn't wander around like with binoculars and like stare at people. I mean, he could, I guess. I wouldn't know. Is that what you do, David? If you're listening to this.
Of course, I feel like
this is really a horrific question. Like, we're spreading rumors.
No,
about
David does not do that. David has better things to do with his time.
No, he doesn't.
I think he's still at the beach as of the time of this recording.
That's true. Yeah. So,
he's at the beach and we're not.
But I feel like we'd be pretty much, yeah, you know what this movie's about. And it's dumb. And that's about all we need to know. So why don't we just go into likes and dislikes? Unless we got anything pressing. No?
No.
Let's just do it?
Let's just do it.
Boom. All right, so let's start with first likes. Julia, you're up first.
The cinematography was actually pretty good. It's a pretty movie, and it's shot well. And I think that's true across M. Night Shyamalan's movies. Usually you have some pretty nice visuals.
True.
That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. The likes of this movie are going to be difficult to explicate and enjoy at length.
I would agree. Yeah, but I'll agree with you, Julia. Cinematography is pretty decent.
So we're going JSP for this? So was that your first like too then, Sean?
No, that's not my first like, actually. Okay. My first like would be vaguely related to this, which is that the trees, bushes, and other forms of vegetation union is well represented here. That is also, by the way, if you want to know the shorthand, it's Tabufvu. Just in case you need to know, because it's a very important organization. So the Tabufvu Union is very good. Yeah. That's all I got.
That's all you got.
Yeah, the likes are going to be really thin. Because this movie's terrible. What about you, Paul?
Well, okay, my first like was... I bought into to a particular scene in the movie. They're stranded in this little town in Pennsylvania, and there's just the news that the border is 70 miles west, and the exodus of people to cars, ignoring the people without cars for the most part, and just driving off like maniacs. I could completely believe that people would be dickish and selfish enough to do that. It's like, because they clearly see these people, they're asking for help and they just drive off. Unfortunately, I could believe that when the chips are down, people would be that horrible to each other.
I mean,
I like that view into real politique, as it were.
I mean, it is believable that people would basically run over one another to get away. It is kind of odd that the weird conspiracy guy who stares at his neighbors through binoculars is the guy who stops for everyone.
Oh yes, the landscaping couple, but I want to talk about them later.
Yeah, they're an interesting lot.
They are an interesting lot.
Yeah, but that scene mostly is terrible though.
The movie is terrible. I'm trying to find bits of joy and happiness.
He didn't say the scene was good. He said that it seemed realistic that people would ignore other people and drive off in their cars, which is totally fair. That seems like a thing that might happen.
I do think it would be fair to say that the scene where people are just driving, not the stuff that is immediately before and immediately after, that's okay. But it's the stuff that is immediately before that's terrible, like where they stand up in the middle of the room and they're like, well, people are dying, we should drive away now. And then they get in cars and they go, and it's like, what?
Yeah, you're getting into one of my dislikes.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. So I'll agree that the scene of them driving cars away from people is not terrible.
Thank you, Sean.
I'm like, you've been given permission to have that like now, Paul.
I appreciate that.
Well, that's the fastest we've gotten through a sequence of likes, so why don't we just jump to dislikes, shall we?
Oh boy. Go,
oh,
Julia.
Oh, boy. Yeah. There's so much to hate, so Julia, go.
So, Sean, you mentioned that the Bush's Trees and Plants Guild is really well represented.
Yes.
My first dislike is that for all that the movie does have some really nice visuals, and for all that that's true about the Bush's Trees and Plants being well represented, I was very disappointed that at no point in the movie, with all of the shots of wind whispering through trees and waving grass and stuff, there was no point that made me feel a wave of dread and horror at, like, wind ruffling grass. And I have not actually seen other movies that do this, but I've heard other people talk about horror movies that do this. I think there's, like, a Korean or Japanese horror movie that has, like, really ominous wind ruffling grass that will make you feel super, super scared of the wind ruffling grass. And this movie, if any movie ever called for that feeling, it was this movie. And there was none of that. Like, there was a lot of ruffling grass and I was just always bored.
Yeah. Because it's not menacing.
No, it's not. And it should be. Because if you're going to have a movie that's a B-horror movie with scary grass, the grass should actually be scary.
Right, like you think, like, at some point, like, a tree would just, like, reach down and, like, pluck Mark Wahlberg out of the air and, like, chuck him.
Or just the fact that, like, you know that the ruffling grass, when it gets to you, is going to do something horrible. But there's even scenes where they're like, let's outrun the ruffling grass, okay. And it's not even scary.
Yeah, that drove me crazy when the wind mysteriously, like follows them. But it's like, but wait, it's wind. It just goes. It doesn't, like, go, like, mysteriously slows down, by the way, as it's following them through the grass. And I'm just like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, the wind doesn't, like, slow down.
Yeah, that's definitely, like, a thing that I dislike and ties into a second dislike that I have, too.
Okay.
So I'll save what I have to say about that later.
Well, I will say that my dislike is very much related to yours, because I did write the following. I said, motherfucking trees are killing us, and they're running away from motherfucking wind. What the fuck? Because this movie, when they realize what's actually doing it, like, if they were just really stupid people and they thought it was the trees killing them, but then it turned out it was actually, like, a terrorist attack, that would just mean that we just followed some dumbasses for a whole movie, which is lame. But it is actually the trees killing us, and I can't. At no point could I buy that as a real thing. That
See,
trees.
And I think that's the movie's fault for being bad, because, like, I think that if it were done well, you would buy it and be scared of trees, which is cool. Like, if it could actually succeed at that, but it does not. None of the trees are scary.
Well, but this film does an excellent job of undermining the scientific method.
So, are we getting into that dislike at this point? I'm assuming you have that as a dislike.
Can I just,
at some point.
I just get out of the way, because it's related to another dislike, but it wasn't originally one of my dislikes. Is that somebody else's dislike?
Yeah.
Can we just do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because I've already opened the can of worms. And
open up the can.
Okay, so if you've not seen this movie, the opening scene is Marky Mark in a room. Like, by the way, the idea that they would have let Marky Mark in a room full of young, impressionable minds to teach them, of all subjects, biology and
now,
science.
To be fair, I've heard that Marky Mark took the role, and I've heard Marky Mark actually says that it's a terrible movie, and he's just like, I'm sorry, that's a terrible movie. But that the reason he took the role was because he always plays certain types of characters, and he thought, you know, hey, it would be really cool if I could play an intelligent science teacher for once. And then he got to be in this movie, so, welp.
An intelligent science teacher!
I assume he thought that before he saw the actual script.
Or
I assume
director.
It was, like, pitched to him as, like, it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie. M. Night Shyamalan's super hot. You know, he did The Sixth Sense. It's cool. And his movies are always clever and have an interesting twist. And you're going to be a science teacher. And Marky Mark was like, cool, I'll be a science teacher. That's pretty cool. And his movies are usually smart. This will be good. And then instead he was in The Happening.
Well, this is a good lesson for Marky Mark that you never sign the contract before you see the script.
I think the lesson that Marky Mark learned was that he's just better doing the typecasting that he usually does and raking in the millions.
Yeah, that's true. So in any case, so that opens with the scene in which they're talking about the bees disappearing. And Marky Mark is like, you guys got any ideas? And then they get to the one with like where he makes fun of the kid for having a perfect face, which, by the way, he would get fired for that. Because you can't sexually harass your students by, like, making fun of them having cute faces. Like, that's just ridiculous. And of course, the kid comes up with, like, well, it's just an act of nature. We don't know. And Marky Mark's like, yeah, you're right. We may never know. And I'm just like, no, that's not how science works. I'm sorry. That's not the answer to the bee problem.
There's a very almost definite anti-science theme in this entire movie. That is just one of the most... I'm gonna get this dislike of me out of the way as my first dislike. It's the most stilted classroom lesson I've ever seen. Respectful awe for the laws of nature, not accepting a scientific method, and it's just that weird. It's not even Socratic method. It's just like trying to get kids to come up with ideas, and he clearly has something in mind. It's like, what school? What school or method are you going for a teacher? Had he ever spent time in a classroom, a high school classroom, watching a science teacher talk to students? Ever?
No.
No, see, like, he was trying to be a cool teacher. He was trying to be the kind of teacher that really engages students.
He kept calling them guys. Come on, guys. What's your idea? And then, of course, he said the most dreaded line anyone can say about science. Well, it's just a theory. And I was like, oh, fuck
yeah. I know. My rage-o-meter started early in this movie and often in that classroom scene. And
see, I'm going to come back to the scene in my second dislike, so I'm not going to say much about it right now, but we will revisit the scene again.
And it just gets worse. And then it comes much later where he's like, everybody be quiet. Like, the wind is coming for us. So let's stand here and be quiet. And then he starts running through the scientific method. But of course, he's not actually following anything he's saying. He's just like,
and
run.
Everybody's like, what the hell? We got to do something. He's like, just give me a second. Just give me a minute. I got to think through the scientific method.
Yeah. It's just like, what the hell? It's almost like he's going through a personal mantra or something, which is that divulging science to the point of, well, culture or religion. And that's not what the scientific method or science is. Sorry.
No, it's the most ridiculous scene. And then, like, he's whispering, like, interpret the evidence. That's what I'm doing right now. He's, like, talking to himself. And there's that moment, of course, when he also has a conversation with a plastic plant, which should tell you much about this man.
Shush right now. We're talking about that.
So in any case, the whole movie undermines the scientific method it's basically just this anti-science movie where you get to the end and it's just like, well, guys, government did it. Yay. And that's basically the end of the movie. And then, of course, the French get attacked by the trees.
Sacre bleu.
Sacre bleu. Oh, blah. Yeah.
Right, so we have to now return to the smaller world of likes. So, Julia, your second like.
Okay, so... I'm gonna bring up the plastic plant because that was one of my likes.
Go for it.
Oh god, no.
So okay, so the point in the movie at where this comes up is that they've run away. They've like been stranded in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania when their train breaks down, and then they all leave the scene of the diner in the town when everybody drives off, and they go off with Mr. and Mrs. Greenhouse, and then like there are bodies in all directions, and they can't drive anymore on the roads, so they end up with a group of people in a field, and they all split up into smaller groups because Marky Mark uses his scientific method to somehow to derive that plants are killing people in large groups. So then he and his small group, which includes him, his wife Zoe Deschanel, the daughter of their friend who's run off and died, and then like two other kids end up at a model house, but they don't realize it's a model home. Like they go into it and they don't realize it's a model home at first, and they're like, let's go get food and stuff, and then one of the kids finds like an orange juice glass and tries to drink it. He's like, everything here is fake. And that's what, like, it starts to click that it's a model home. But in the home, and this is like the one scene where they actually got the plant thing right. Cause at that point, the greenhouse dude has said it's the plants and everybody's like, that's crazy talk. And then Marky Mark is starting to come around to thinking like, no, maybe he's right. Maybe he's onto something. What if it is the plants? And he's looking and there's this giant potted plant in the corner of the room that's like a big tree, and he's looking at it and he's just like, crap. Cause there's a plant in the room with me. And the guy had been like, we can talk to plants and plants can talk to us. They respond to human stimulus, blah, blah, blah. And so like Marky Mark's little wheels are spinning in his head and he's looking at the plant. The plant is kind of shuddering and there's a little wind and you're like, oh shit, is the plant going to kill him? And he's looking at the plant and he's like, okay, so just want you to know, I want to talk to you in a very positive way. Just to say like, you know, I don't mean any harm. And we're just going to be here, and then we're going to go. It's all very peaceful. I'm talking to a plastic plant. Because then, like, he touches it, and he realizes it's plastic.
And then he keeps talking to it.
Talking to a plastic plant. And then he keeps talking, and he's like, I'm still doing it. And that was hilarious. That was, like, the one part where I was like, this is great. This is exactly what the movie should have been like all the way through. But it was only one moment. But that was amazing, and I loved it.
I like how you described the wheels in his head as being little.
Because you can see them. You can see a little, he has little gears and hamster wheels and like
a little bit of steam coming out of his ears.
Machine in there. Like there might be like a toaster that has to pop up some toast and that hits a lever that sends a marble going down a spiral that then makes the gear roll, and that's all going on behind his eyes.
His little mouse in the wheel that.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Lights the light bulb that goes ding. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, and then the light bulb finally lights, and he's like,
Oh. I should talk to the plants.
Exactly. So that was a beautiful moment, and it was one of the few things that made me genuinely happy in the movie.
Fair enough. Okay. All right. Well, I guess you should go to mine then.
Yes.
I will just say that I like that John Leguizamo is in this movie. And while it's not my dislike, the fact that he dies halfway through did annoy me, because I thought that the movie should just have been about him and his family. Because he was more interesting to me.
I like John Leguizamo as an actor. His character didn't have anything to do, and it was sad.
I know, which is why it should have been about him and his family. Like,
not that character, though. Like, it should have been he should have been a better character. They should have given him material that he would have done awesome things with, but instead he had basically nothing to work with.
That's true. But, you know, he came off of like, he's kind of like a little dweeby mathematician, hence the skit in which I suggested that the original plot was actually about a super smart mathematician who discerns patterns like a character for numbers. You know, that was kind of like what I would hope for, and like it's him trying to put his family back together as this dweeby mathematician guy with glasses who slightly drools on himself. You know, it's good. But it's not what movie we got. So I would just enjoy the brief moments of John Leguizamo in this movie.
Yeah, this actually ties into one of my second likes. I might as well get out of the way because, well, you have to find the small nuts in this movie where you can. One of the most interesting illustrations of the power of large numbers that was illustrated to me when I was young is called the chessboard problem. Have either of you heard of it?
Mm-mm.
Before this movie? Basically, it was the story goes this shah wanted to reward his favorite vizier for all his years of service, and the vizier says, "I want something very simple. I put a grain of wheat on the first square of a chessboard, put two on the second, and keep doubling until you've covered the board. That's all I want. That'll be enough for me to retire off." And the Shah thinks, "Nice! I have to give the beer so much money." He starts doing it. And the power of doubling, and John Leguizamo gives a version of this. Yeah, by the time you'd get to the 64th square, you'd have more grains of wheat on that 64th board than there are atoms in the universe, because of the power of doubling.
Huh.
And I like that he actually brought that up. I thought, yay! That's one of my favorite problems ever, because it just shows just how large numbers can get from a very simple origin. I would have preferred if he had done it the grain of wheat's way rather than coins, but that's fine. That problem was in the movie, and I was happy for it because it is one of my favorites. So that's my second like.
Fair enough. The
doubling paradox.
That's totally fair.
Yeah. He does do a couple cool math things. Also makes up statistics.
He always makes up statistics. But that one he doesn't make up. That's perfectly legit. So
true. That is true.
So I'm happy for that.
Well, what about you, Julia?
What are we on now? This is my second like?
Yes.
Did
you already
do it? I
think
that was mine to begin with. I did the plastic plant.
Did the plant. So
oh, that's right. You
dislikes.
Did. Oh, we're on dislikes. So Julia, second dislike.
Let me go back to the classroom scene. Okay, so like I didn't see this movie until this year. And
oh, no.
I did see the previews for it back when it was first out. And you know, the previews all show that scene where he's like, something is killing the honeybees. What is it? And I thought that either this movie was about the bees getting back at humans or the thing that was killing off the honeybees killing all humanity. That was my impression from watching the preview of this movie. And honestly, for the first 10 minutes of this movie, that's also what I thought was happening, because he's got this whole like honeybees are dying off. And it's this giant scene where he's like telling the whole classroom, you know, honeybees, blah, 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 honeybees, which is a big problem, colony collapse disorder. Yeah, and you know, it is actually like if all the honeybees died, we're pretty much screwed because they actually make a lot of our food work. Yep. So like if we don't have honeybees, we also don't have like most of the produce that we rely on for food. And that is a big problem for us humans on Earth. So I was like, well, cool, you know, it'll be about honeybees, or it'll have something to do with honeybees, or else why have a whole scene where you explain about the honeybees? But in fact, no, that never comes up ever again during the whole movie, has nothing to do with the larger plot at all. So why the hell was it a focal point in the beginning and used in the trailer? Like, that is just bad writing. If you're going to focus on something, it needs to be relevant.
Yeah, I think the intention was that all of these things were connected together.
It was not connected to anything.
That was the intention.
It was totes not connected to anything.
Well, I think that the idea being that the honeybees were something that we're responsible for, so it's partly why nature's pissed, is we're fucking with the honeybees.
Okay, that you, if you want to read it super hard, you can try to make that connection, but it's not there.
Oh, I'm not saying the movie makes it. I'm saying that's what I think it's trying to say, but says so poorly that you really, it doesn't work.
It's not there.
I mean, sure. No, I'm just
saying. This movie could have done so many different things that would have actually been cool, but it did none of them.
Oh, I can think of some things it could have done that would have been pretty cool, and I will have those for later. Because I will have a new casting for this whole thing. Just so you know.
Oh, dear.
So that was my second dislike, and you guys can keep going.
Fair enough. Oh. Paul, what about you? Or is that me? Oh, it's my turn, isn't it?
It's your turn. Go for it.
So since I've already kind of gotten this out of the way, I would just say that I hate Mark Wahlberg in this movie.
You hate Marky Mark?
Oh, my gosh. I just hoped his character would die. He overacts so often in this.
And that could have been used to such good use, because the talking to a plastic plant scene was great.
Yeah.
If the whole movie had been super cheesy overacting, which actually was fun to watch, that would have been great.
That's the key though, right? It's gotta be fun to watch.
No, see, like, the problem with this movie overall, and I know I'm stepping on your leg, but I just have to get this off my chest, is that, basically, this is a well-made version of Birdemic, which makes it that much more intolerable to watch, because Birdemic is actually fun to watch because it's kind of so ridiculously bad that it becomes fun.
Oh,
but this, because it has high production values, it just sort of loses any spark of fun and becomes sad and boring.
Well, we're going to have to agree to disagree because no, I hated Birdemic so much.
Yeah.
But I know it's one of your joys.
Actually, from what I just found, I don't think Birdemic's the right parallel for this movie.
Oh no. Oh,
finish your dislike and then I'm going to talk about this, because this is now going to be my second dislike, because I found this. I'm going to call an audible.
Are you gonna call an audible?
And talk about this as my second dislike.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, Marky Mark's not terrible as an actor. Like, sometimes he can be really good. But in this, it's just, like, there are moments that are excruciatingly painful to watch for me. Because his acting at times, I mean, it's just terrible. He overacts the lines. He also, his character, if I'm honest, the character he plays is really, really dumb. And I don't mean that in the kind of, like, you know, normal everyday kind of person might seem dumb, I guess, when trying to talk about science. I mean, he says things that no rational person says. For example, when we learn about the first time there's all the deaths, it's in Central Park, and he remarks, when he learns this, he says, "An attack in Central Park? That's weird." And my thought was, it's 2008, you just had 9/11. It's not weird at all to think that there might be a terrorist attack in Central Park, because a lot of fucking people go there.
Yeah, no, is totally something that everybody would be like, crap, people are attacking New York and well-populated places, that's horrifying, and not, in fact, that's weird. But again, it's a case of, like, if that had happened in Birdemic and the Birdemic actor had said that, it would have been, like, funny, because he would have said, "An attack in Central Park, that's weird."
No, he would have said...
And, like, he would have actually said it more wooden than that. I can't even be as wooden as he is.
He would not have said, "That's weird." He would have said, "That's fine."
You're taking my dislikes away, but I just want to jump in on that for a moment.
Sure.
And because I have it actually written down. Going back to the beginning of the scene, the beginning of the movie, we have the discussion in Marky Mark's class. My God, you got me calling them that now. And then they dismiss the schools after the attacks. What the hell, movie? What the fucking hell?
They would have locked that school down, and everybody on the campus would have had to stay where they were.
In New York City, no less. In New York City, which, as you pointed out, had a terrorist attack not 7 years prior. If there's a terrorist attack, they're just going to let the kids go out in the streets? Hell no!
Well, and they also, like...
To be fair,
that school was in Philadelphia.
No, Marky Mark's was not.
Yeah, Marky Mark lived in Philadelphia.
Is that where they are?
Yeah, no, they're in Philadelphia. So the attack happens in New York, and what happens is the school people come to him and say that there was an attack in New York.
Why are they moving the kids in Philadelphia?
They dismiss everybody in the Northeast because of this attack on New York. Philadelphia is only a couple of hours away from New York by train.
Well, no, he's in New York.
He's in Philadelphia. And, like, then, like, they find out that Philadelphia also got attacked later and Boston got attacked later. So they got out of Philadelphia just in time, basically.
I thought they were in New York and Philadelphia was something else. Okay.
Pretty sure they were. I'll just, like, look it up now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
that Marky Mark's school is in Philadelphia and that they're all from Philadelphia.
Yeah, I've got calling him Marky Mark too.
And the Funky Bunch. That's the people he runs away with.
But even if it's in Philadelphia, they're not going to let the kids go wandering out into the streets after a terrorist attack.
From Wikipedia, in New York City's Central Park, people begin committing mass suicide. Initially believed to be a bioterrorist attack using an airborne neurotoxin, the behavior quickly spreads across the northeastern United States. Elliot Moore, a high school science teacher in Philadelphia, hears about the attacks and decides to go to Harrisburg by train with his wife, Alma.
Okay, I thought they were going from New York to Harrisburg.
No, they were going from Philadelphia to Harrisburg, and Julian is trying to go up to Princeton because his wife went in the opposite direction.
Because Julian gets on the train. I thought they were going to stop.
Julian's wife was supposed to be on their train, but then she couldn't get that train, and she ended up going to Princeton instead.
And I was thinking, so
he gets in a car to go after her.
We just spent several minutes trying to make sense of this stupid movie.
We did.
I like how I actually paid attention to where people moved geographically during this movie. Why did I do that?
I'm usually the person who's dependent about that sort of thing, and I screwed it up. I feel like I let down the side.
It's all right. I was there to pick it up for you.
We still love you, Paul.
But yeah, I'll just leave that as my second dislike. The dismissing of this. I'll save the one that's burning for number three. But yeah, dismissing the schools in the midst of a terrorist attack nearby and just going la 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 la. Even if it's in Philadelphia, which is only 75 miles away from New York City.
Really close. And honestly, no one would do that. Like anywhere in the Northeast or the East Coast in general, I can't imagine any schools being allowed to dismiss the children.
Hell no. The principal would get his ass sued in 5 minutes for that sort of behavior.
Yes.
No.
It didn't make any sense to me when I just didn't understand, like, all the teachers leave all the rooms. They just leave all these high school students alone.
Well, because the principal actually, like, gets all the teachers to leave the rooms and is like, come on, teachers, we're going to have a special teacher summit. Just leave your kids to run wild, because that's totally how schools work.
Oh, and on that subject, by the way, no, I'm sorry, but there is no teacher who has kept his job who can – turn off the lights in a room full of high school students when the vice principal comes in and, like, basically declare that person's Voldemort.
Oh, yeah.
That person's not keeping their fucking job. That's
just a strange relationship, Marky Marks.
But see, that's because Marky Mark is a cool teacher who really knows how to reach the students. I'm surprised you didn't know that.
Yeah, except that it undermines the authority of the administration.
No, Sean, you're missing the point. He's a cool teacher who knows how to reach the students.
No, he doesn't.
He's a cool teacher. Let me just repeat this. And maybe if I repeat it enough times, you'll believe it.
No, it'll never happen.
You're trying to do Inception.
But M. Night Shyamalan has given you all the cues, Sean. All the cues.
No, he has not.
He's a cool teacher, Sean.
That's great. That's great that he thinks he's cool, but he's not. He's bad.
He's an awful teacher. He's an awful teacher. I'm trying to think of a teacher in a movie that's worse than Mark Wahlberg's here, and I can't think of one offhand of a worse teacher.
Listeners,
is Ferris Bueller's Day Off Ben Stein a worse teacher?
No.
Anybody?
No.
Bueller?
No, he's better. He's actually looks like, actually knows something.
They were clearly trying to make him like Robin Williams in the Dead Poets Society.
Oh, but man, wow.
That was clearly what they were going for. They were going for the classroom loves him because he's so in touch with kids. And they're all going to stand up on their desks and say, oh, Captain, my Captain.
Oh, for fuck's sake, if they did that. If they did that, I would have thrown something.
And you know why? Because he's a cool teacher.
No, he's not a cool teacher.
Stop saying that, Julia. Stop saying that.
Does it become true?
I'm going to say it so often. By the end of this, you're all going to be like brainwashed. Marky Mark is a cool teacher. Yes, Julia, we agree.
Stop it.
Our listeners are going to be brainwashed. Perhaps we should go on to third likes then.
Well, has everybody done theirs?
Yeah, I did the dismissing.
Right. Okay. I just want to make sure.
I'm saving the bombshell for next.
Fair enough.
Okay, right. For my third like, this is actually another thing that I did, the other genuine like of the movie. When I saw this moment, I like laughed out loud and totally was like, this is amazing. They meet this soldier and, I see you all know what's coming. I forget what even happens. Something startling happens or they tell him some bad news. Anyway, the soldier is super upset and he says, cheese and crackers!
Because he can't curse
instead of
this
like
movie.
Jesus Christ or something, cheese and crackers. But he sells that line, and it is hilarious.
Yeah, that scene was.
So yeah, that was the other the two moments in the movie where I like actually was like, okay, that was good. Were the talking to the plastic plant moment and the cheese and crackers.
Oh no!
That brought you joy, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Okay.
I actually know why he says cheese and crackers instead of something else, but that will get, when I get to my third dislike, I'll explain.
Uh-oh.
But, you say, so third like, Sean, go.
I think I know what you're going to explain, Paul.
Uh-oh, yeah, because I shared the hint at the link in the comments.
No, but
yes.
You shared that in the comments, but also, like, I kind of guessed, but yes, you should totally talk at length about that.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
Because when it happened, I was like, why would he say that? And I was like, obviously because he wasn't going to say Jesus Christ, which why would an R-rated movie care about that? There's pretty much only one answer.
Yeah.
Well, because then they'd have to break out into song. Jesus Christ, Superstar.
Oh God.
But the fact that he says cheese and crackers, and like, he's this soldier in a really bad situation, and he clearly means it. That kid totally, I don't know who that actor is. I don't know if he's been in anything else, but based on the delivery of that line alone, I kind of want to watch everything he's ever done.
Fair enough. Goodness. I love you, Julia. You come up with great things.
So what was your third like?
My third like, so while this movie overall is really boring, it really is, at least it does some cool things when people die.
Aw, you're taking away one of my likes.
It's a little bit creepy. I mean, it's not suspenseful. It's sort of like, and there is some really good camera work. Like, for example, when they're shooting themselves in the head, we actually just follow their feet. So there is that sort of, I can see the desire to produce the suspense. Like, we know they're going to shoot themselves in the head, but we don't see it. We have to wait till the sound. And so we're like anticipating, but there's some cool deaths. Like, there's one woman who stabs herself in the neck with the, hair thingy toothpick or whatever that thing's called. Or, yeah.
It's like a chopstick or a hairpin.
Yeah, the hairpin.
Or a knitting needle or something. It was something jammed into her hair.
It could be all of those things, I guess.
You can use a chopstick or a knitting needle to tie up your hair. It might have actually been a hairpin that's dedicated for that purpose.
Fair enough. So she does that. There's the moment with the all the people jumping off. By the way, this movie won an award for best stunt work, by the way, for the scene with Eck at the construction site when all the people jump off the top of the building and die. Yeah, so they're cool ways that people die, you know? John Leguizamo cuts his own wrist with like pieces of glass after getting in a car wreck. That was cool. So yeah, that's it. That's all I got. It's not funny.
It's not funny, but I had this as one of my likes as well. The goofy ways people off themselves in this movie. The guy and the lawnmower.
Yes, he lays down.
Yeah, he turns on and lays down in front of it. I thought, oh, what the hell? And the guy that gets into the lion cage. I mean, that's horribly acted, horribly shot, but just the idea that he just goes wandering into the lion cage to get killed. It's like, I mean, it's horribly produced. I mean, because it doesn't look realistic at all. And we see that on the video. It's so weird, but it's just like one of the, like, yet another goofy way people kill themselves in this movie.
Yeah, by the way, that guy's arms get pulled off by a lion with, like, almost no effort.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense to me, but, you know.
No, it makes absolutely no sense. But, yeah, it's just the wacky way people kill themselves in this movie.
Yeah. In that case, I didn't think that was a very good one, because I think they could have solved that one easily enough if they had just cut the video at the point when he gets attacked by the first lion and it just mauls him, and then they're done.
But it's almost like torture porn in a way, like watch the person die, so they couldn't cut away because the whole point was to see him die.
But it's, yeah.
So see, like, this is actually the point where I have to say, well, I agree that they did come up with a multitude of ways that were interesting that people could die. I actually looked away during every single scene, and I was very glad that they at least telegraphed that there was going to be a gory moment coming pretty much every time, because I don't like stuff like that. And I accidentally did see the beginning of the point where the woman stabs herself in the neck with the knitting needle.
I
was like, ah! But pretty much every other time that there was going to be gore, like when they're like, you got to see this, and they show up the phone and it's like the guy in the lion cage, and before anything happens, like, I had plenty of time to be like, I totally don't have to see this, and I will not. So, yeah.
Fair enough. I liked it.
It's, yeah, I was like, this is a little bit too much like a gory horror movie for me. But luckily, like, at least, like I said, I could look away. They gave me enough warning.
That's good. I'm glad that you were able to.
So you guys are talking about like how the lion pulled off both his arms. And I'm like, did he? Because I totally didn't see any of that. I was like, there's a dude in the lion cage. This is not something I want to see. Looking away now.
Yeah, he does. He does get his arms pulled off. But they're not real arms, obviously. Because... No, that would have been,
physics just does not work, and the human body does not work like that.
So you're saying that, like, people don't actually have their arms pulled off in the service of cinema?
No, I'm pretty sure that doesn't happen.
Way to ruin the illusion for me, Sean.
I know. I know. It's. I do this all the time, and I've been told by the Screen Actors Guild to stop. But I can't help it. So, Paul, that was yours?
That was mine as well. So we'll go on to third dislikes, Julia.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, no.
I'm
going to get the serious one out. So I was, like, all down with the fact that Marky Mark had a small group of people that included Zooey Deschanel and three kids. And one of the kids was a black kid, and I was like,
oh,
cool.
Oh, no.
Yeah, who's the first one of that group to die?
Yeah.
It's the white kid.
No, it was the black kid. Does he die second?
Yes, he gets shot in the head.
Very sad that they, like, immediately, they were just like, nope, we gotta kill off the black kid. And I was like, man, I miss Deep Blue Sea when the black guy gets to live.
Yeah, I didn't understand. I also didn't understand that whole scene when they're like,
no, it made no sense and it was horrible and it was just basically something to kill off the extra people so that it could only be Marky Mark's new family unit.
That scene makes absolutely no sense. So they're looking for food, right? So they go to an abandoned house. What the heck are they doing going to an abandoned house looking for food? It's not like it's a house that's been just abandoned in the middle of this thing. No, it's boarded up and looks like no one's been there for years. And you're going there looking for food? What are you expecting to eat? 10-year-old cans of beans?
Canned food.
No, like, then there are people in there. And they're like, we could see people in there. And, yeah, the whole scene just doesn't make any sense. And it's horrible. Why didn't they leave the porch? Like,
yeah.
None of it makes any sense. And it's awful. And I was very sad because, like, the black kid was the kid who had the most character in that whole group, more than any of the other actors.
I know, he gives him
Zooey Deschanel. He's the one who finds the orange juice glass, and he's like, dude, everything in here is fake.
And he also is the one that gives, like, Marky Mark Merrill advice.
Yes, he totally does. No, he's a cool kid, and I wish the movie had just been about, like, him surviving. Like, I wish we would have seen what his day was like and how he got there, and then, like, he lived, and it was all about him.
Yep.
The way that Sean, like, Sykes in Inspector Gadget, that's how I feel about that kid, and that's how I was so super sad when they killed him off, and, like, yeah, because I didn't care about Marky Mark and Zooey Deschanel and their stupid marital problems over the dumbest affair ever.
It's not even an affair.
No, it's not. It's not.
Well, hold on. Save it, because I'm going to talk about that.
And, like, also the little girl who was supposed to be cute, I guess, and we were supposed to find their bonding cool or whatever. But, like, literally all those characters were so bland that there was nothing to actually like about them.
It's true.
And one character that I did like? No. And the soldier. Man, if the soldier and the black kid had teamed up and they survived and they went through the whole movie being like, we're awesome and full of character, cheese and crackers!
And John Leguizamo, the mathematician.
If his character had actually been cooler, could his character please be cooler?
Yes, like we'd actually get to see him be a nerd.
Yeah, if his character actually had stuff to do and was cool, then I would be down with it.
Okay,
but as the movie presented, the characters that were actually, like, presented well in the movie were the soldier and that kid, and I would have liked to see the movie be about both of them.
I can make that happen for you. I'll rewrite it. Just for you. Julia.
Okay. Okay.
And we'll have that kid whose name I don't remember.
Josh? I don't remember any of their names.
One of them's named Josh, but I can't remember which one's named Josh.
I don't know. Like, nobody in this movie's name mattered to me.
We'll name him Antonio.
Except that the little girl was named Jess, which was very confusing because Zooey Deschanel stars in The New Girl, which is a sitcom, and in that, her name is Jess. So every time they said Jess, I expected them to be talking to Zooey Deschanel, but they were talking to the little girl instead, and that was a confusing thing that they could not have predicted at the time, because The New Girl didn't come out until a couple of years after that movie.
Fair enough. Okay.
So your third dislike, Sean.
Okay, well, I said I was going to talk about this, and so it's coming now. The marital conflict makes no sense. At all. So for those that have not seen this movie, hold on, hold your britches, Paul.
I'll have britches.
Well, whatever. For those that have not seen this movie, the beginning of the movie we learn that Marky Mark and Zooey Deschanel have a conflict in their marriage. There's something going on. We don't know what it is, but they're having a rocky marriage. Excuse me, I burped because I've been drinking a lot. And it turns out that what actually is going on is that she's becoming emotionally distant because she doesn't deal with emotions very well, which whatever, fine. But it turns out the reason why she's doing it is because she had dessert with a guy, I think that's from her work. And the guy, like, won't leave her alone now. Is like sending her messages and calling her all the time. And she feels guilty because apparently she thinks she had an affair. And that's it. And so there's the moment when she, like, confesses and she's like, we're going to die and I'm feeling really guilty because I had dessert with John. And Marky Mark's like, he's not even upset with the fact that she had dessert. He's upset because, like, she just didn't tell him. And, like, he's not even really upset. Like, later on, he says that he went to the pharmacy and there was a cute pharmacist and he asked where to buy cough syrup and he almost bought some even though he didn't need it. It would have been a superfluous bottle of cough syrup for $6. And then, but it's a joke.
And then she says, are you joking? And he says, yes. And she says, thank you. Because that's his way of trying to make her feel at ease with how much of a non-issue her thing was. And like the frustrating thing about that is that that scene almost works. You could see the movie in which that would have worked.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they didn't actually give us that movie. So that scene just is kind of dumb and falls flat.
All of it is just dumb. Like the conflict they create, I understand why they wanted there to be a conflict, but couldn't they have just had it be an actual marital conflict?
They could have had that actually be a legit conflict, but it wasn't because like there are different ways of feeling like you're cheating on someone and emotional cheating is a thing. Like that's a thing. You could have sex with somebody or you could emotionally make a connection where you're like actually in love with someone else. And even if you haven't had sex, your partner could be super jealous and upset.
But none of that comes through.
They didn't do that, and I think one of the reasons they didn't do that was because they wanted you to know that Marky Mark and Zooey Deschanel were both good people. Because you have to have good people survive, and if she had been at all bad, then she should have, like, died horribly, because that's the rules of B-movies, is that people who are at all bad have to die.
But here's the thing, here's how they fixed it.
It didn't work.
No, it doesn't work. And the problem is because how the movie ends is she looks at her little pregnancy tube thing and she's pregnant. And then like, oh, everything's fine. And like, that's how we know they're fine. Well, why didn't they just make the conflict that she is emotionally distant right now because he's brought up the fact that he would like to have kids, but she's really, really scared for some reason. Like she has some past thing or whatever. And that's what's causing the conflict, but he doesn't know that's what's causing the conflict. He thinks that something else is going on or like that their relationship's falling apart. But really what it is that he brought this up and it scared the shit out of her. And that's what's going on. And then they resolve that in the end.
See, I think they could have had the coworker thing. They could have done the thing where she actually just met the coworker for coffee or whatever once. But maybe she was actually somewhat attracted to him and she thought about it. And then she was like, no, I shouldn't be unfaithful to my husband. And I really love my husband. And I think that's what they tried to do. It just didn't come across at all. So, like, you didn't care at all about any of it.
It's done in a stilted manner, and this goes to my third dislike as to why. And I'll work from that to the actual dislike by explaining it. Have you, if you remember back in the 70s, oh, actually, Sean wouldn't remember back.
I wasn't even alive in the 70s.
You weren't even alive. I know. I'm the old man of this podcast, except for maybe David. But Jimmy Carter.
Oh, God.
What?
I like how now I'm imagining Paul with a long white beard sitting on a porch rocker being like, now I'll kiss Jimmy Carter.
Okay, I was like 8 or 9, but... Okay, at that time. Anyway, Jimmy Carter is a very strong Christian man, and he talked about his imperfections, and he talked about the phrase lust in his heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and they could have used that for Zooey Deschanel.
I think that's what they were doing.
They were
trying to do it, just doing it poorly.
They just didn't do it well at all.
And the reason why they're going for that is because, well, M. Night Shyamalan is a very strong Christian. And this movie reflects his Christian values to the point of being very bad for the movie.
You mean to the point where the movie doesn't even make sense?
It makes sense from a Christian intelligent design, monotheistic Christian God perspective.
You say that, but I'm not even sure it makes sense from that standpoint.
I think it does. Let's put this all together. The whole stilted scene in the classroom, and he's trying to come up with things, and eventually it's like, oh, I don't know. It's as close as you can say in a classroom to God did it as you can get without actually saying God did it. Let's move on to the whole lust in the heart and the strange relationship between Zoe Deschanel and Mark Wahlberg, I know I'm cribbing from this old article, but it's making sense the more and more I read this and think about this in the movie. Zoe, they talk briefly early in the movie about them not having a child, which is wrong, of course, because the point of a good wife is to have child for her husband and bear him children. So what do we see at the end of the movie? As you pointed out, she's happy that she's pregnant. And in addition, they've also taken a daughter from a presumably an unbeliever and now can raise her right, can't they?
This is horrifying. That's the real horror of this whole thing, then.
It's a movie about intelligent design. It's a movie about affirming Christian values. Consider what happens at, now I'm going to give away the climactic towards ending the movie. Consider what happens. She's stuck in the one building with the soon to be daughter. He's stuck in the other. They're talking through the pipe. They're talking through their relationship. And then they decide, even though the wind might kill them, they have to meet because they have made this emotional bond. They've reunited as a family, parentheses, under God. So they go out, and we know that in any rational universe, they should be dead, right? Because the wind just killed the lady. It's made the lady go crazy since she was a party of one, because remember, it's gone down, down, down. And they've talked about the peak of this being somewhere in the early morning. But then they rush out to meet each other, and instead, and the wind, he can hear the wind. Miraculously, the wind, it ends before it can touch them. Miraculously, because why? Because they've reunited as a nice, good Christian family, as God intended. So the happening ends. You could even say that it's all, considering that it's really God's way of testing the three of them.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's just nature doing what nature does.
However, I would say that at the end, when we see the news reports, it turns out that the peak of the thing that ended suddenly as abruptly as it started was actually 20 minutes before they decide to go outside.
You're right.
So even though there's wind and stuff, that wind isn't doing anything. There aren't any chemicals with it.
You paid way too much attention to this movie,
Julia. They give you the timestamps, and then they say on the news, it ended at this time, and they give you a minute, and it's 20 minutes before they actually went outside. So by the time they decided to go outside, it had actually been over.
But this also explains why does the soldier say cheese and crackers? Because he should say Jesus Christ, but...
Because it's an R-rated movie, but the only thing that makes it R-rated is that it's gory. It doesn't have really any bad language. It doesn't have any sex. It's just gore.
I don't know. I haven't seen enough M. Night Shyamalan movies to know whether or not anyone ever says Jesus Christ is an expletive in one of his movies.
They might in Signs, but
I don't know if anybody does, but they definitely don't in this one.
And they conspicuously do that. It's just, so yeah, my dislike is that this movie is really just Christian polemic.
If so, I hate this movie even more. That just fine, that it's just so heavy-handed.
It just looks that way the more I think about this.
Yeah, I hate this movie so much now. I just want to go to bed.
How about we go to our fourth like?
Why'd you do this to me, Paul?
I didn't pick this movie.
I didn't either.
You mean the revelation? I'm sorry. Reveal, pulling back the veils of reality, show you the horrible truth of this movie. I apologize.
Can someone just make like a sequel to Yore so we could watch that next time to like be cleansed?
Heck, I'd rather see Birdemic 2.
No.
Oh, I can't wait to see Birdemic 2. Is it on the list? Because I just found out that it's actually out.
I will tell you that if you put it on the list, I will remove it.
No, you cannot do that, Sean. We have to watch Birdemic 2. It's going to be amazing. I don't know if it's going to be as amazing as Birdemic 1, but it should be great.
Lightning can strike.
See, if I have to watch Birdemic 2, then I have to punish you with something.
You've already made me watch 2 Transformers movies.
I know.
Isn't that punishment enough?
No, that 2 Transformers movies is equal to 1 Birdemic.
No. No. You've heard how angry the Transformers makes me. Like, I think Transformers is actively bad for my health. I think it might give me a heart attack.
Listeners, what do you think? Do 2 Transformers equal 1 Birdemic? Please let us know at skippyafandy@gmail.com.
Tell us what you think. Should Sean have to watch Birdemic Part 2?
I will say that based on what Rachel Axe says about Transformers 4, I think that may be 2 Birdemics.
Based on what I've heard about Transformers 4, I'm super glad that I said I would not watch any more Transformers movies because it seems like they just keep getting worse.
Oh, they do.
Because I listen to Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo's movie reviews every week, and that's a British radio show that they have the podcast from Radio 5. And Mark also hates the Transformers franchise a lot, except that unlike me, his job actually is to go see them and then talk about them on the radio. And so, like, I've heard what he has to say about it and what listeners have written in about it, and it just sounds like it's actually that the whole franchise is just getting even worse. And I just, you know, it makes me so, the way that I felt watching those two movies was just so much rage that I swear, really, like, honestly, when I say it might give me a heart attack, I'm not making that up.
My God, Julia, it's just a movie.
It's a movie that induces major, major rage in me because it's totally horribly misogynistic, sexist, racist, and horrible.
No, it's true.
Maybe. Yeah, it like, I don't need to make myself angry that hard.
I've given up reading the Blue SF crowd just because their anger is finally
exactly
overwhelmed me. I can't do it anymore.
No, like I try very hard not to follow links that happen on Twitter and Facebook that I know are going to take me to more SF stuff that's going to make me upset, because I really just need to concentrate on doing other stuff that's actually cool.
Yeah, we do cool stuff, and thank you again, listeners, for nominating us for Hugo this year.
Yeah.
Thanks, listeners. You are awesome. And again, to all of the other fan cast nominees, if you're listening, we think you're all awesome too.
Except Patrick Hester. You're not awesome, Patrick. I'm coming for you.
Why, instead of coming for Patrick, why don't you come and give us your fourth like of this movie, Sean?
But Patrick's my nemesis.
Did I give my fourth like?
We haven't started. Oh, that's right. It's you. That's you, Julia. My apologies. I was jumping. Sorry.
Yeah.
My apologies, Julia.
Don't skip her. Jeez.
Okay, so this is going to be another small one, and it's like the cinematography thing. The music for the movie was pretty decent. It started out with music that was atmospheric and interesting and nice. It was basically in the background, and that was cool. It wasn't unpleasant to listen to, and that's all I have to say about that.
It's the same guy. He got to do the music for Last Airbender, which is the only good thing about that movie other than the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, see, I didn't see Last Airbender. I heard about the casting, and I was just kind of like, you know, I'm just not going
to
go.
I want you to watch that movie.
If it's on the Torture Cinema list, maybe someday I will.
We've already
Otherwise,
done it.
Probably not. Did you guys already do it for Torture?
Yeah, Jen and I did
then
that
Then I'm probably never going to see it.
Ah. Well, we may have to revisit.
No. No, there's too many other movies on our list.
You'll have to come up with some sort of special fundraiser reward for the next time you need a bunch of money, and then like, it'll be like, you could make Julia watch The Last Airbender and then talk about it with me.
I love that that's your response. The next time I need money. Thanks, Julia.
Well, it's got to be for something special. I'm not just going to do it.
No, that's true. It's a terrible movie. Like, But
like, there's not a world in which recreational I am like, you know what would be a really good use of my time? Watching The Last Airbender.
I will say that there are 5 minutes in the movie that are worth watching.
That's not sold me on it.
I'll just have you watch those 5 minutes.
Okay.
Because it's got good music and it's got no dialogue. It's just people doing stuff. And it's kind of beautiful. It's sort of like that. If that had been the movie, it would have been a great silent film that could have been nominated for an Oscar. If not for the fact that the main character is supposed to be of Inuit descent and is actually whiter than I am.
Yeah, see, these are problems.
Yeah.
Problems.
There is that small issue with
just,
that scene.
Just a tiny, tiny.
Oh, it's a big issue in the whole movie, but for that 5 minute section, it's much smaller because that section actually, well, no, because he's not, Aang is not Inuit descent. He's, I don't know what he's supposed to be. But in that scene, I'm totally talking about this movie now. In that scene, it shows him with his, I guess, like his people, where he's doing basically religious service, or they're doing meditation and things like that. But the people that are there are multiracial and multigendered. So they're people of all kinds of races and genders, which is not what the rest of the movie's like. It's not intermixed like that. It's very much like all of the brown people are evil or oppressed. And then white people are good people for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, that's a great narrative.
Very familiar. Very lame. But moving on, shall I do a fourth like?
Yes.
What haven't I done yet? Oh, right. I like the cranky old lady.
Oh, she was just so annoying.
She was awful and evil, but she was also more interesting than most of the other characters in the movie. And I also enjoyed, like, her weird, sort of creepy paranoia in which she, like, thought that they were gonna, like, steal all her stuff. And, like, she just, like, would one moment she'd seem like a normal-ish person, and then the next would be like, I'm crazy and I'm gonna blah, 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 blah. And then, yeah, and then she gets infected and smashes her head through a window. And that was pretty cool.
She was a very, 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 very strange character.
She was cranky.
Yeah, I was
cranky,
not sold cranky. On her at all.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, I'm comparing her to Marky Mark.
Yeah, she was probably one of the better characters in the movie, but she was badly done. She could have been such a better character. There could have been a movie that had a lot of nuanced characters and it would have been interesting, but there wasn't that movie.
No, that's true. Wasn't that much. But I will tell you, for my fourth, like, the two characters I did like, and maybe I'm scooping you guys, and maybe you disagree with me, it's the landscaping couple.
They were some of the more interesting characters in the movie.
They were quirkily interesting. I mean, they have a landscaping business. They like hot dogs. I mean, it's like randomly. And it's not even like one of those informed things. It's like, oh, we like hot dogs, and it's like, oh, at one point we see them eating what must presumably be cold hot dogs. It's like, that's weird. But
that's not.
Cold hot dogs?
Yeah, yeah. We ate those when I was a kid, man. You just pop one of those suckers in your mouth and yum, 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 yum. Done.
I've never eaten a cold hot dog in my life.
That's because you're a commie.
Maybe I am a commie.
When I was a kid, I remember my mom telling me not to eat cold hot dogs because, like, I might get foodborne illness or something. She insisted they were cooked. I don't actually know that that's true. Hot dogs may be okay to just eat cold.
There's so much crap in them.
Because they're cured and all that stuff, right? So.
I'll eat stuff like salami and pepperoni cold without cooked.
Yeah, so like, are hot dogs actually dangerous? I don't know, but like, I grew up believing that because my mom was like, you can't eat a hot dog until it's cooked.
Yeah, hot dogs, they're pre-cooked.
Huh.
Sean says that. Of course, Sean may be actually damaged from all the raw hot dogs he ate as a kid.
Food safety for moms-to-be, the FDA.gov, and there's on here, hot dogs are...
I like how Sean is rustling a paper.
Oh, whoa.
He has all of the food safety rules from the FDA.
I'm apparently wrong.
On one sheet of paper
Him. No. It's apparently a myth that hot dogs are pre-cooked, so it's okay to eat them raw. It says on the FDA website, Actually, it's important to always reheat hot dogs until they're steaming hot. Some ready-to-eat foods, such as hot dogs, can become contaminated with Listeria monocytogenes after they've been processed and packaged at the plant. If it's not possible to reheat hot dogs, don't eat them.
Okay, so basically my mom was right?
Your mom was right.
Wow. Okay. I'm lucky I didn't die.
So crazy landscaping couple were not following FDA rules. But then again,
that might explain why they were so crazy.
That might explain why they're so crazy. And not to mention this, the little things about they talk about casually about spying on their neighbors. And
well, like the thing I liked about that is that that was a glimpse of how you could have had a really interesting movie with nuanced characters. It seemed pretty clear that they had a rocky relationship, and she was really upset with him for spying on the neighbors. And she was like, they were like, are those bodies in the road? And they're like, I don't know, we can't see that far. And she's like, why don't you get the binoculars that you use to spy on the neighbors? Which was like obviously something that she was really upset about. And I was like, that's cool that they actually have this tension.
Yeah, they actually have some depth to them. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed the way they off themselves in the movie because it was off screen. I felt cheated by that. I mean that whole death sequence makes sense, but we only get the reports of the gunfire, and that which kind of felt weak source. But I liked them when they showed up, and I was sad that they didn't make it that far in the movie. But then again, as we've discussed, this movie is about establishing Marky Mark, Zooey Deschanel, and their adoptive daughter as a new family, a new Adam and Eve and child for under God, and so everybody else had to go.
Yeah, everybody else that we saw, which was sad because I really would have liked to see the soldier and the kid
survive.
Yeah, I would like to see the movie be about them.
So yeah, my fourth like was the landscaping couple. So now we're on fourth dislikes, Julia.
Fourth dislike. Okay. For the most part, this movie didn't have this, which I was thankful for. One thing that like often makes me really avoid horror movies a lot is jump moments. I startle really easily in real life. And it's like not fun at all. But like basically I've actually unplugged from the wall the landline telephone in our house because it rings really loudly, and basically no one calls that line who isn't a telemarketer anyway. So I've just unplugged it completely. Theoretically we have it, so if we needed to make a call we could plug it back in and I could make that call. But I basically use my cell phone for all phone calls because when the phone rings it makes my heart race and I jump and sometimes I twist my neck and it's really not pleasant. And the same thing happens to me when the doorbell rings. So like if I've ordered a pizza, I have to be ready for that. And sometimes even though I know it's coming, it will still make me jump in a really unpleasant way and it physically hurts. So I don't like jumping and I don't like jump movies. And I tend to really be careful about watching horror, especially if it's going to be the kind of thing that makes you jump a lot, because I don't like it. It's not good for me. And I don't know why, but like I get a bigger adrenaline rush than most people too. So I get like tingles all over my body and it's really unpleasant. It's not fun tingling. It's like, oh God, we're all going to die tingling. So there was a point at the end of the movie when there were just like all of a sudden, even though there hadn't been jump moments all throughout the movie, so I really wasn't prepared for it. There were a couple of like really gratuitous jump moments when they're in that house with the old lady. And I was just like really upset when that happened because I twisted my neck watching this movie.
Aww. Oh no.
So like my neck still kind of hurts. Thank you, M. Night Shyamalan.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
No, it's not cool. Like, it was at the moment where he goes into the room and he's looking for her and, like, there's a weird creepy doll in the bed, which, like, all the creepiness I was down with, I was like, okay, that's really creepy and disturbing. And then, like, the woman jumps out and it's just a jump moment for no reason. And that was when I twisted my neck. Thanks.
I'm sorry.
Thanks, Shyamalan. I feel like I should be able to like drop and give me 20 Shyamalan.
Shyamalama.
No, I'm gonna say his name right because I still believe in saying people's names right.
Oh, so no Shyamalan Pistachio.
No pistachios.
I pretty much reserve that for Snoozy LaPork. Snoozy LaPork does get Snoozy LaPork, though.
Snoozy LaPork.
Snoozy LaPork.
All right. Shall we, should it be my turn then, I guess? Well, yep. Actually, I already did one of mine earlier, so I will skip me this round. So go to you, Paul.
What was the one that you did earlier?
I have done Marital Conflict, Motherfucking Trees, Mark Wahlberg, and Mark Wahlberg's character being dumb / science bullshit. So I've done four already.
All right, cool.
So, Paul, four.
Okay, we've talked and danced around about it, but I will mention it directly. The stilted dialogue of this movie,
God,
and the delivery of the characters, for the most part, it feels like, it looks like they're reading stuff off a teleprompter.
Which is why it's not as good as Birdemic.
Which is why it's not as good as Birdemic.
Because Birdemic feels like that, but it's so bad that it's funny. But this has high enough production values that it's not even funny. It's just boring.
I mean, this has higher rate actors just not acting or really giving any sort of shit about what they're reading or what they're doing. I mean, so he was the director. What in the world was he thinking as he was watching the delivery? It's like, this is okay. I'll take it.
I don't know. Like, it was terrible. And I totally agree with you. And I was thinking about the Christian thing that you brought up, and another movie that came out roughly around the same time. I think maybe a couple of years earlier, was Premonition, which had Sandra Bullock in it. And that had really overtly Christian themes as well, and it was also a horror movie. It also had really gorgeous cinematography, and I think that, like, honestly, Premonition was a better Christian horror movie.
I mean, yeah.
I didn't really like Premonition. I had big problems with it. But, like, this movie just terrible direction of the actors, because I think that any of those actors could have done better, and a couple of them did, like the soldier. Cheese and crackers! But, like, I think Marky Mark and Zooey Deschanel both could have given better performances than they did, and I think part of it was that they were directed to be just, like, bland and awful.
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of that, and they just, like, once Wahlberg realized what he was in, just decided to do the minimum necessary to get through it and didn't engage in any passion with what he was doing. And it shows. It's just like, the movie has too many problems, but it just wastes almost every ounce of acting talent it has.
Yeah, like, I think what happened was Marky Mark signed up thinking he was going to be an intelligent science teacher, then got on set and got the script and realized what he had signed up for and was like, this is actually what I signed up for. And then he was told, like, no, you got to say it with more with more seriousness and slowness than that. And probably he just gave up.
I think
and
so.
And it was just like, whatever, I'm just going to say random stuff. I don't care.
I mean, like, there are moments that are really good bits of dialogue, but they're never with the main people. So, like, there's one moment when John Leguizamo's character of Julian actually says to Alma, don't take my daughter's hand unless you mean it. But he says it, like, you can see in his face, just, like, there is that moment where, like, you don't want to fuck with daddy at that moment. And that's done really well. And there's also with Mrs. Jones when she's kind of in one of her cutesy moods, when she's sort of like, so who's chasing who? And, like, she's doing this whole thing about chasing, who's chasing, and all these kinds of things. That was kind of cute, I think. It, of course, is met with, like, Zooey and Marky Mark, like, staring at each other weirdly. And, like, no, there's nothing else going on. Because when they talk, they just ruin everything.
And of course, to wave Julia's flag, of course, who's chasing who? Of course, Marky Mark's chasing Zooey Deschanel, because we couldn't have the reverse, because that would be good and Christian.
Problem is that, like, actually neither of them was doing any chasing. There wasn't actually any chasing happening.
Right, and
she'd had dessert with a coworker that she didn't like and told off in the beginning of the movie, and was actually just with Marky Mark, and no one was chasing anyone.
I know, and then she smiled about it.
Yeah, but I think there's more. more metaphorical chasing.
There should have been. It's just unfortunately, yeah. Like they could have done that plot better, and there would have been. But in fact, there was not. There was no tension around that at all.
Every plot in this movie better. Why does that one be different?
I mean, there's like that moment, and I'm going to talk about this later too, when the train conductors all stop. And
that was actually pretty good.
No, that's terrible.
And when they're when Marky Mark is like, "Why aren't you telling me things?" And I was like, "Oh, honey, if you had to work in service and this happened, would you tell anyone? You'd be just be like, whatever, I don't know, away."
But what he asked them is hilarious, because what he says is, he goes up to them and is like, "Hey guys, what's going on?" And they're like, "Yeah, so the train service is discontinued, like you're all going to have to get off here." And he's like, "What do you mean? Where are we?" And they're like, "We're in Filbert." And he's like, "Filbert? Does anybody know where that is?" And it's like, well, clearly it's in Pennsylvania. And then he goes, "Why are you giving me one useless piece of information?" And my thought is, you only asked him for that useless piece of information. Why did you only ask if you wanted something else from him? It's so dumb. Oh, it's so dumb. I was trying to see if in the quotes if there's any of that really bad dialogue. Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah.
Don't lose the sand points looking for it, Sean.
I won't.
Julie, should just go on to her fifth and final like.
Okay, my fifth and final like. This is going to be a big one. Audience, are you ready?
No.
No, yes.
Okay, let's try this again. Are you ready?
Ready for Freddy.
Movie was better than Lady in the Water. That is my fifth like. It is written down on my paper. That is it. The end. Done.
Wow.
Damn. That's hardcore, Julia.
How are you going to top that?
How am I going to top that? I can't on this particular round.
Well,
I don't think so.
You're up for your fifth like.
Well, I can't beat that, Julia. I'm sorry. You win this round. So
I'll get you next time. Get it.
Next time.
Yeah, I can't do that voice, though.
Where's Justin when we meet him?
Yeah.
Where's Justin when we need
I've had too much to drink to even try, so I'm not going to. I'm like standing up dancing right now. I'm like, what's up? Yeah. Anyway, so my last like is that though this movie's terrible, it did make me want to know what happened to characters who only appear on the screen for very short, brief snippets of time. So, and I had already brought this up, and so my example is actually what happened to all the train conductors?
Yeah, what the heck?
Yeah, no, totally, what happened to all the train conductors? That would be, why wasn't there a movie about them? That would have been awesome.
Yeah, what do they mean they lost contact with everybody? Because they go into the town, and, clearly everybody's still got, TV and radio.
Yeah, they've lost contact with everybody, even though this is only happening in a very limited part of the Northwest, and, everybody else has... I don't know.
So what did they mean?
That's actually a backup dislike of mine. Although it's not the back, it's not the back dislike I'm going to go with. But yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, what happened? Yeah, we only see the train conductors for a little bit.
Right, but they're clearly not still in town, so they must have got in the train and driven away. Right? So where did they go?
I don't know.
Is there a moment when they got infected and they drove the train at 100 bazillion miles an hour and crashed it?
Possibly. I mean, I think we're supposed to assume that everybody else died. They probably died. But I would like to see a movie about the train conductors and then somehow their paths cross with the soldier and that one kid.
Yeah.
Well, and that would have been a much better movie.
Why are there so many conductors?
One of them would have been the driver, and then there usually are a few different attendants on any Amtrak train. There'll be at least one person who comes and checks tickets, but there's also people who help just keep things going, and people who attend to sleeping cars and people who work in the cafe car and the restaurant car, the dining car. So there could be a lot of Amtrak staff on a train.
Okay. All right. I guess. So yeah, that's all I got, guys. So, Paul?
Yeah, my last like, I'm kind of running out of likes here. I was happy that the zip codes on the map were correct. we see that map and we see some random towns and we see some zip codes on there. And after the movie, I had to Google those zip codes to make sure that Wait. Were they really in, really plausibly in Pennsylvania? And yes, they are in.
I love kind of that's the detail that you looked up after the movie.
I want to see if they screwed that up too and just put some random zip codes for any other state than Pennsylvania, which was entirely possible. Then they just picked any stupid map and decided to go with it. I mean, the movie's not really, doesn't really give us any, what's the word, mise-en-scene about that this is in Pennsylvania. Did you guys get any sense of this?
Yeah, no, they did. They were in Philadelphia at the beginning, and then like also when the attack comes on Philadelphia, it comes at a particular park in Philadelphia.
Right, but after that, once they're on that train, they could be anywhere.
But they left Philadelphia and they were specifically going into like the western Pennsylvania.
But there's no. I don't know where they filmed this movie in real life, but it doesn't. It doesn't have any sort of feel. Given the old lady and her strangeness, I thought when she first showed up, now going on a tangent, that maybe she was Amish, given her weird not wanting to connect stuff, and that would make perfect sense in Pennsylvania.
Well, there's sort of like a backwoodsies type element to Pennsylvania, so.
Yeah, well, I know the classic definition of Pennsylvania is Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in the middle.
Oh.
I didn't make this one up, but so anyway, so yeah, I Googled those because make sure that they actually were in Pennsylvania, and yes, they are actually at least they got that map right.
It looks like they actually filmed in Pennsylvania as well. I went to filmmaps.com for The Happening and, got a bunch of hits for different small towns in rural Pennsylvania.
Okay, so
and Philadelphia.
I could tie that into my life then.
So that diner that they went to actually is a diner in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
So not in Filbert.
No, Phoenixville.
No. Is there a Filbert, Pennsylvania?
Is there a Filbert, Pennsylvania?
I have no idea.
Well, let's find out.
But yeah, also the Amtrak station that they get onto the Amtrak in the beginning is 30th Street Station in Philadelphia. The high school is actually also in Philadelphia. And Rittenhouse Square is, I believe, where the attack happens, and that was actually at Rittenhouse Square.
There is a Filbert, but they clearly transported that to more eastern Pennsylvania. Filbert's near Pittsburgh, and then you get anywhere near close to it.
This is making so much sense now.
But at least that map was correct with the zip codes, because that's more sort of between Philadelphia and Harrisburg. So
they did film in it looks like Phoenixville, Media looks like, and Wynwood.
And looking at Google, those are actually west of Philadelphia, so that works. So while Filbert was the wrong thing to name this town, at least they filmed it in places which they actually plausibly could have gone through. Okay, that makes me feel better in a tiny little sense.
Yeah, okay.
They actually filmed it in the right sort of terrain.
Whatever makes you feel like the hour and a half you wasted watching this was worth it, go for it.
I could have picked that as my, like, that was short.
But. It's only 90 minutes, so there is that, too.
But we have to talk about our last dislike.
I know. We do.
Julia,
your last
one. Okay, this is, like, probably a stupid thing, but it really bothered me all movie long. So, like, the whole idea is that there's this neurotoxin. It makes people kill themselves. It comes through the plants releasing chemicals. The wind makes it happen. Except that, like, okay, throughout the whole movie, except the very beginning and the very end, it appears that when the neurotoxin is released into the air, everyone in the area where the neurotoxin is present gets, like, affected and then kills themselves. Except the first scene when it happens in Central Park, and the woman is sitting on the same park bench with her friend who stabs herself in the neck with her hairpin, who is just like, no, I have to be the person who's not affected so that I can be horrified by it and you'll all see that I'm not affected. Whereas like the construction workers, you could imagine that like the neurotoxin hit the top of the building but not the bottom of the building. And they were protected and shielded by the building being in the way. But not the two people on the same park bench. It made no sense. And like all throughout the rest of the movie, it was like anytime people were hit by it, if they were all in the open, they all were hit and they all killed themselves. And then in the very end, in France, lo and behold, we have the exact same setup where two friends are walking through the Tuileries and like then one of them is like all of a sudden I'm going to kill myself and the other one is like totally not affected even though they've been walking through the exact same path. So how is it not affecting some people and affecting other people? And like, I don't know, they could have done so many things that would make the neurotoxin scarier or that would have made it more interesting. Like either it kills everyone, like if everyone who was in Central Park had died, including the woman who was sitting next to that friend, that would have been scary. Or if we like worked out that the neurotoxin sometimes kills people and sometimes doesn't, and we don't know why some people are immune, that would have been scary because it's also like even more scary because you don't know what it is and what it's doing. Like that makes things scary. But no, it was just like really stupid and frustrating. That's basically how I feel about the entire movie.
You're absolutely right. I have a note here as an alternate movie violates its own rules about the neurotoxin. And you're absolutely right. It does. It's not consistently applied.
And it's not even like it's explained via miracle. It's not like if you take the Christian interpretation and like it's an act of God that God has chosen to spare those people. Like that's never given to you as an explanation either.
Yeah, and there's that moment later on when they're running from the wind and they all have to stop and they like huddle together and the wind blows past them and then stops. And they all go, it didn't get us. And then they keep going.
Yeah.
And that's never explained.
Nope. Nope.
So.
It just none of it made any sense and it was super annoying.
If they at least had tried to explain that maybe like they let Marky Mark and his friends go because like the trees liked them, then that would be
like,
better.
No, I was actually expecting there to be some development with the whole like Marky Mark talks to a plastic plant and then actually tries talking to the real trees and is like, hey man, I'm on your side, and the trees are like, okay, you get to live.
Yeah.
But no.
No,
that would be a more interesting movie than the one we got.
Yep.
All right. Excellent. Well, I guess it's my turn.
Yep, your fifth dislike.
You all ready for this?
Yep.
Everybody dance now. So we should stop. Except that everybody should watch the Christopher Walken dance video that's to that song. And it's like basically Christopher Walken studied dance before he was a famous actor. And so he's trained in dance, and he finds a way to dance in almost every single movie he's in. So somebody has made like a master cut of something like 50 scenes where he dances, and made a video to Everybody Dance Now with all Christopher Walken's dance scenes, and it's kind of amazing.
That sounds a lot more entertaining than this movie.
If you Google Christopher Walken Everybody Dance Now, I'm sure it'll come up. I watched it this morning because I think like HuffPo posted it, and I was like, I'm going to waste 5 minutes of my time and watch this, and it was worth it.
Oh, it sounds like it's worth it.
It was totally worth it.
But that's not what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about, Chuck?
I am talking about something that happened when I saw this movie in 2008.
Oh.
And that is
Did you see this movie in the theater?
With Jen.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
With Jen.
Wow, it's so sad that Jen is not on this podcast. Did Jen like it? Because I feel like Jen would like somehow be like, yeah, this movie is terrible. I watch it every time it's on cable.
Sorry, Jen.
No, I have a feeling she doesn't remember this movie very well.
Do you think she doesn't like it as much as she likes Jumper?
Oh, I'm sure she likes Jumper more because there's actual things to like about Jumper. Like, you know, the fact that they have special abilities that are at least sort of explained. Yeah. And
well, this is explained. It's the trees, man.
And the fact that when Hayden Christensen is doesn't talk and he's just jumping around doing his jumpy thing, it's kind of fun. But then he talks and ruins things. But no,
that is an unfortunate side effect of having Hayden Christensen in the film.
I know. Eventually, he has to talk. I wonder if it would be better if you watched in like the French subtitles.
Sand is rough, but you are smooth.
Oh, that is the creepiest hit line.
No, don't do
that. It's so creepy.
I'm really sorry. I can't help it. No. I did invoke the prequels.
No. Julia, bad Julia, bad Julia.
They're
this
on the
is
list.
Torture cinema, you guys.
Yes, but you have to add to the torture. We had to talk about The Happening.
So in any case, so I saw this in 2008 with Jen in an actual theater. I paid money for this. I went back and looked at my review of this movie.
God help us.
And discovered that I actually gave this movie a favorable review.
Wait, you did? What?
In 2008.
Wait, what?
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Because I was a moron in 2008. I don't have any other way to explain it. I wasn't an alcoholic. I was stupid.
So what did your favorable review say? You know, I think that I read that Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars.
Okay, I don't feel so bad about myself now. Wow. I would like to share with you some of what I wrote, if that would be okay.
Yeah, do it. We're listening.
Okay, here we go, guys. Is Shyamalan a genius? Yes. Is this
Wait. I'm sorry, I have to stop you so we can laugh at you now. Okay, come on.
There's a but to that, but I didn't get to it. In any case, is this an example of his genius? Sort of.
Sort of?
It doesn't get better. It doesn't get better. I don't know what was...
Keep going.
Okay, please go on and enlighten us, Sean.
I can hyperventilate if you don't.
Yes, it does pull at some of the familiar tropes found on his work, but it doesn't give the same comprehensive feel that his other movies do. Let's face it, Shyamalan has been slammed by critics and fans alike, the vast majority of which have been disillusioned by the media. God.
That's like but I'm pretty sure Lady in the Water came out before this and you didn't see it, and like that's not why we were disillusioned. It was because Lady in the Water was horrible.
Hold on, I'm not done. Let me finish my conspiratorial thought about why Shyamalan is misunderstood. God. Disliked by people who are disillusioned by the media, who have attempted to make his films look like something they're not, or simply too narrow-minded to realize that his films are not typical Hollywood reboots touting the same typical cliches in the same exact way as every other Hollywood scary movie. And I think that's where I will stop, because there's more horribleness that I wrote about this movie. Although I am thankful that I did recognize that the actors in this are mostly terrible. But yes, I gave it a favorable review.
Sure.
And I will be like totally fair on you for saying that his movies aren't the typical Hollywood reboot, because up until that point, like even though he was doing the twist with every single thing, The Sixth Sense was actually a great movie. It was lots of fun. It was fun and fresh. And, I did not at all mind Unbreakable. That was a fun movie. And I actually even have a soft spot for what we in our house call the Willage, because my mom had a German foreign exchange student and that's how she pronounced it. just like, are we going to see the Willage? And we all went and saw the Willage. And we now all call it the Willage. But
we must see the Willage now.
This is because in German, so the V's in German are pronounced as F's and W's are pronounced as V's. A lot of times Germans who are learning English will kind of like make this mistake of transposing. They're like, I know it's a different sound, so I'll just go with like V's and W's are interchangeable, so I'll call V's W's in English. So like you'll hear, like I've had German friends talk about vampires. And I have like one of my best friends is German. And she's totally fluent in English, but she was talking about the vampire situation because she'll occasionally even do that herself. I think even now, even though she's like basically flawless with no accent at all. Occasionally just kind of code switch and be like, yeah, so it's like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then she came up with this whole backstory about how vampires are actually like led by George Michael. And they all sing like "Wake Me Up Before You Go Go."
Wake me up before you go go.
I'm a vampire, baby.
God, it's so weird.
They all live in the village. Anyway, I say this and like I hope that any Germans who are listening totally understand that I am not actually making fun of German speakers at all, because you guys are all much better at language than any American average person would be. And I include myself in that, even though like I think I have more foreign language than a lot of the average American. I think the average German gets a lot more language acquisition through school than we do.
Yeah,
that's true. It's true.
So you guys are awesome, but it's just that the ways that people have defaults on language are funny, and it's true for English speakers and other languages too.
Oh yeah, I mean, listen to an American try to speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Yo hablo español.
Or take, for example, a British example. Take when when Sean Connery is Spanish.
Oh my God. No, okay, so like my 10th grade Spanish teacher was actually British. And so she spoke Spanish very well as far as like knowing the words and the grammar, but she had this British accent, and in Spanish you usually don't pronounce the H. But she had this beautiful British diction, and she would say things like green beans, habichuela, habichuela. And like half my class was native Spanish speakers who were, you know, Southern California kids from Spanish speaking neighborhoods who spoke it at home and were taking the class because they needed a foreign language requirement and wanted the easy A. And so they're like, yeah, sure, lady. Habichuela.
It's just, oh wow.
Oh, wow.
That's adorable.
Habichuela.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? Ashi, ashi. Dos cervezas, por favor.
Oh no. I've had too much beer. Speaking
muchos tacos.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Oh God.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
So yeah, also my brother, my sister married someone who is a native Massachusetts person, and his family is from Gloucester, which is a little north of Boston on the coast. And so like they have, you know, the solid Massachusetts accents, a lot of them. His brother is a lobsterman, you know, like very much solid, typical old Massachusetts family. And when my brother, who is from California, came out for the wedding, he was like, wow, this Massachusetts accent is so cool. And he spent the entire hour drive from our house to Gloucester, where the wedding was, there and back, trying to do what he thought was a Massachusetts accent based on commercials that he'd heard from Pepperidge Farm. And he'd be like, it's like the commercials in Pepperidge Farm. And I'm like, no, man, you don't sound like you're from Massachusetts. Also, I'm pretty sure Pepperidge Farm is like Maine or something, but you don't sound like you're from here.
The only thing I can think of is saying yad. That's
what?
It.
Park the car.
Yeah,
park the car and have it yad. Yeah, yeah. But no one would ever say that, and you can't park cars there, so like that's not actually.
It's not a useful sentence.
It is not a reasonable sentence to ever say. It is, however, written out in tourist t-shirts and bumper stickers and stuff. So you can buy stuff that says that in Boston.
Fair enough. Well, we've gone very far afield, so why don't we back up? I've done mine. I've embarrassed myself.
I get to do the last dislike for this movie.
Oh, do we get to sing you in?
Sing me in.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes.
The final dislike.
Okay, go, Paul. Sean. Okay. I thought someone's gonna play drums.
Now it's Paul's turn.
Okay. Now it's my turn. So my final dislike is this movie has no idea of the utter chaos happening would actually cause in a real world. I mean, consider the results of the happening is basically to wipe out most if not all the population of the entire Northeast. But what do we see in the coda of this movie? Life going on happily. She's Zoe Deschanel's pregnant. The father, I mean, it looks, is taking the kid to school. It looks like everything's gone back to normal. I will say one word for this and I'm going to get a rating again. Bullshit. If you just wiped out the population of the fucking Northeast, life is not going to go back to happy normal in any reasonable universe.
Yeah, where do all the bodies go?
Where all the bodies go? Society itself would be completely different. Where's the population? What, did the entire population of the Midwest and California decide to repopulate the Northeast? Where'd all the people come from? They're all to be dead.
So I think at that point, one thing that's important is that we don't know how much time has passed. So they have had enough time to regroup. We also don't know that everyone in the Northeast died. We know that everyone with their group died. However, the last scene in the movie is the first day that schools have reopened. Right. So we don't know how long it took them to get to the point that schools reopened. Presumably in the interim, there was a lot of time like rebuilding infrastructure and cleaning up bodies. And presumably people did come in from other places to help with that. And presumably they're like kind of operating skeleton crews in cities. And the fact that we really don't see anyone else on their street. They live in their house, but we don't know if their street is empty aside from them.
It doesn't feel empty, though. The bad cinematography, bad direction, and we don't get the sense that the city's been hollowed out. Not to mention, I think society would not reboot so easily. Not to mention, the daughter doesn't visibly age. Neither do they. So it can't be that long. So, okay, I imagine the bodies and whatnot have been cleaned up. Although that's a monumental task.
They'd get people from the rest of the country because it only happened in the Northeastern region. It didn't happen anywhere else. So everywhere else, all of the power grids, all of the infrastructure, all of the food delivery, all the mail, everything was still running except in those places. And where it happened, like even though a lot of people died, there wasn't mass property destruction. Like, so it wasn't like 9/11 where like New York had a lot of ash and rubble and it was really horrible. No, there were a lot of bodies to clean up. But other than that, it was pretty much like the power didn't go out. Nothing bad happened.
But it's the biological equivalent of dropping several neutron bombs on the Northeast, and I can't imagine just killing people and leaving the property. I can't imagine that life would go on so blithely. It just seemed not to mention all the news at the end saying, oh, maybe it was government, we don't know. It just seems. They shrug off the event so cavalierly.
Yeah, they do shrug off the event very cavalierly.
I mean, you just had probably 40 million people die. That's got to happen.
Maybe, but they don't actually say how many people really died. We don't know. Well, I mean, we know that Mark and Zoe and little girl made it out alive. And we know that they're the only subset of their group that we followed.
Right.
And we know that a lot of the people in their group did die, but we don't know that everybody that they encountered that day died. Like, we don't know what happened to all the people who left that diner.
No, but remember what they hypothesized, that the effect gets stronger and stronger to that final point, to where even groups as small as one will kill themselves. We see it with the old lady. So unless there's a hell of a lot of people who manage to get themselves in airproof rooms, they're going to kill themselves. No matter how isolated they are from everybody else, because of the strength of the potence of the neurotoxin and the effect.
I guess so. But I don't know. None of it made any sense anyway, because like that lady killed herself, but it's not like the house and the spring house were actually airtight. Like any neurotoxins that swept over that farm should have gone into the house and the spring house as well.
Yeah. So yeah. But I still didn't like
and the aftermath. And as evidenced in the first and last scenes, apparently like even in the areas where neurotoxin totally strikes everyone down, apparently there are occasionally one person who survives just so that they can tell the tale of horror.
And with that, I think maybe we should close out this movie.
Well, hold on. I just need to make one more connection.
Okay.
Oh, no.
At the end of the movie, there is a bus driver who drives children, and I believe it's the same character that appears in Godzilla, who is the heroic bus driver in the Godzilla movie.
No,
is this the 1998 movie?
No, the new one.
Okay.
There's only one heroic character in that whole thing, and that happens to be a random bus driver who's on the bridge as Godzilla's about to crash into it, and he's like, fuck this, and he's like, and he drives through everything and like knocks over a tank. Not really, because it's in a bus, but yeah. The same guy. It's true. He's lived through two disasters. He needs a break.
He needs a vacation.
I know. He's been through so much. I mean, do you think he still learns the names of the kids?
Maybe not anymore.
Yeah, he's probably got to that point where he's just like, this is just a fucking job. I'm just driving these little snot-filled little pus baggots just everywhere. Yeah.
That's probably, that's where he is at the point that he's in Sharknado.
Is he in Sharknado 2?
That's why there's that busload of kids that the other people have to rescue, because the bus driver has given up.
But that bus driver's white. And he dies. He gets killed by a sign.
Is that the bus driver, or is that somebody else who tries to save them?
Oh, I don't remember. Maybe the bus driver lived. Who knows? That's a totally side thing, but we should probably grade this thing.
Yeah.
Julia goes first.
Julia.
I don't know. Like, it's not the worst movie we've seen for torture cinema, and it's not the worst movie I've seen ever. It's just not very good. So I guess D?
Okay. It's okay. You can give it what you need to do.
Yeah, like, no, it's really not the worst movie. It's just also not good, so I guess I'd give it a D.
Okay, so Julia gives it a D. Paul?
The anti-Christian theme, the horrible acting, the lack of thought in the world building. It's just going to manage to escape the dreaded F, but only just. I'm giving it a D minus.
All right. And me, I basically hate this movie. I was so bored when I watched it. It's probably not the worst thing I've ever watched. However,
We've seen the Star Wars Christmas special.
We have seen it. I feel like the Star Wars Christmas special is more entertaining.
That's probably true.
Despite the fact of being horrible.
Yeah, no, like, I think I agree. But we have seen worse movies for torture cinema.
Because I feel like on an entertainment value, you can watch the Star Wars Christmas special and it can be fun. This, I don't think, even if you're watching it knowing it's a bad movie, it's just not fun.
No, it's not. But it does pass the Bechdel test.
Right, some women talk to each other about something other than a dude.
It happens more than once in multiple scenes. Because there's, landscaping couple, and then there's the Jess and Zooey Deschanel, and there's Mrs. Jones and Zooey Deschanel, and
I thought you were going to bring it up.
There's the woman that talks to her daughter, who we just hear the daughter's voice, but you do hear the entire conversation, and the daughter's, in Princeton in her room. And then she ends up killing herself.
I'm surprised you didn't list that as a like.
I don't know. Yeah, this because movie just, like, there wasn't, even though that happened, I didn't like it. It was just there. Yeah. I mean, I guess good on the movie for passing the Bechdel test, but it's not a great movie.
I mean, no,
this
it's not.
Movie yep. passes the Bechdel test better than Guardians of the Galaxy does, so.
I have not yet seen
don't
Guardians of
the
Galaxy.
Don't ruin that movie for me. I will bite you, Paul. But yeah, so I will give it an F plus because I don't like it.
So we average out to a D minus.
Yeah, so it's a D minus, which I think is fair. It's just not a very good movie.
But that gives me a moment to tell you how I would make this movie better.
Well, we have a moment. You take an hour to do that.
Well, I'm gonna be quick. I didn't write down like a 5-page explanation.
Okay.
But I did have an idea is that we could make this movie better. Are you ready for this, guys?
I'm ready.
Okay, so you recast Marky Mark's character with Vin Diesel. Instead of being a science teacher, he's a metal shop teacher who got injured during a football season in college and couldn't make it to the pros.
Okay.
So that's some of his background character. It'd be important for later. His wife will be played by Zoe Saldana, who would actually have a job in this movie. that we would know about. She'd be a hotshot New York City lawyer who currently works for an environmental company doing cases against companies that pollute. So that'll be a good background for what will come later. I'm going to keep John Leguizamo and the little girl because it's John Leguizamo and he's adorable. He's going to be a mathematician. He's going to be more important. I'm also going to replace the wind terror stuff with clouds of yellow pollen, which turn out to be spores. That way you have something that's actually definable chasing you down streets. And Robin Williams will play every character on TV in various forms of drag. So at one point he'll basically be Mrs. Doubtfire. At another point he'll be like a guy in a funny beard. So those are all the casting changes. I will change the plot as well. Most of the movie is actually going to be spent in an underground bunker with an old man who thinks JFK is still alive and living with Martians on the moon. Vin Diesel, John Leguizamo, and Zoe Saldana would inevitably get into a fight with this guy over whether to open up the vents to let in the clouds of spores, because he believes that it's going to rewrite our biology so that we can live in the Martian atmosphere when the Martians come and bring JFK, who's now their leader. Vin Diesel will get fatally injured, and he will somehow exchange his, he'll convince the spores that to take his life instead of his family's, and then John Leguizamo and Zoe Saldana will survive with their kid, and then they get married in the future and live in a treehouse. So that's that part. Alternatively, if you really wanted the villain to be something other than a cloud of spores, you could replace it with Steve Buscemi dressed as a guy who believes he's a tree. And then you would, of course, replace the main cast with Jake Gyllenhaal playing the journalist character from Zodiac.
If we do that, Steve Buscemi has to be a superhero, a supervillain who calls himself Dr. Entropy.
Yep. So that would be how I would change this movie, and I hope you would agree with me that that would make it much better.
Yes.
In terms of at least being more entertaining.
I don't know, man. Maybe. I'm not sure you can save this movie for me, but it probably would be more entertaining that way.
JFK on the moon with Martians. What? All right.
But all right. It would still be The Happening. Like, that's the problem.
I know.
If you made a different movie and had all those elements, I might like it better.
Well, okay. All right. Fair enough. We can change the title. We could call it The Event.
No.
That's not.
Although I should have listed that as a like. The entire time, every time they would be like, The Event, even though like it was called The Happening, so they should have been like, The Happening, when that happened. But they kept talking about The Event, and that always reminded me of that Mitchell and Webb look, which is a British sketch comedy show, which if you haven't seen, you should look it up because it's hilarious. But there's this whole series of sketches they do in the last couple of seasons where they have a game show that's happening in a post-apocalyptic world after the event has happened. And so like their post-apocalyptic game show always like starts with a big flashing remain indoors. And then they're always like, welcome to the quiz show and remain indoors. And then they like ask quiz questions and all the answers are like, I don't know. They probably lost their memories during the event. Don't think about the event.
Okay.
And then, like, people die and their parts are rotting off and they don't have food and it's all very horrible and also funny.
Awesome.
But yeah, so, like, basically every time they talked about the event and The Happening, I was like, remain indoors. Which anybody who's seen that Mitchell and Webb look will find that somewhat amusing.
All right. Well, I think on that note, we should probably close out because it's after midnight for when we're recording this, and I'm drunk. Well, I'm not really drunk. I'm just
we're inebriated.
Now. We're inebriated, and I'm sleepy, and Julie is sleepy, and we should retire to our bed chambers.
But thank you, listeners, for putting up with listening to the Torture Cinema for The Happening. Until next time, stay frosty.
Whoa! I close out the show. What are you doing?
Sorry.
What are you doing?
Stay frosty? What?
Yeah.
Sorry, I've had too much beer.
Whoa.
Where did this stay frosty come from?
I don't know.
Did it have to do with anything?
No, it didn't.
That's his catchphrase. It's Paul's catchphrase. Oh, I think that needs to go on his t-shirt.
Paul, Mr. Frosty Weimer.
No, I'm sorry. Frosty. I didn't mean it. Listeners, leave. We should go the last 2 minutes of this podcast.
All right, guys. So thanks for picking. We'll be recording the next one at Worldcon, so that'll be fun. If you're going to be there, just keep an eye on our Twitter feed. We'll let you know when we're recording it, and maybe you can come stare at us through a doorway.
Come say hi to us.
Yes. So on that note, I'm just going to shut up. We're going to go away. Awkward ending. And scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.